Never before in the history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway have so many thousands upon thousands of people crowded through the gates to witness the greatest event in auto racing. And never before have positions in the first two starting rows been won by men driving so many different types of speed concepts. Each machine is an individual look into the future, to be tested and proven in a contest which has no equal. That is the essence of the 500. But what is the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? It is a product of the motor racing age, made of bricks, asphalt, cement, and the ground of Indiana. It is the kind of a place where a young racer can walk slowly back from his path into the wall and ask himself, was it me or was it the car? It is a place where a veteran racer can make up his mind in 2 seconds about retiring. It is a place where you spend 29 days getting ready for a 3-hour and 16-minute race. And there's still not enough time. The wind blows, and you slow down. An engine blows, and oil is on the track. Everything stops for hours. Then it rains, and everything stops for days. It's a place where a man can stand and puzzle over a mechanical creation trying to find the key to winning performance. It is the kind of a place where a young man, cast in the image of his famous father, can become a legend in his own time. It's a place where you can be happy because you found a good car or set a new record. But the heart of the 60-year-old Speedway lies here in Gasoline Alley, where men with their eyes on tomorrow experiment and work to make dreams of the future winning realities of today. Is colorful, and there's time for things like a ride in a London taxicab with the highest paid cab driver in history, a chap named Graham Hill, who won the 1966 500. Gary Bettenhausen brought a dirt car to the Speedway for his driver's test. It was obsolete when his father raced here, but this almost winning turbine of 1 year ago is obsolete also. A thoughtful Parnelli Jones decides to sit out this 500. But Joe Leonard of San Jose, California, is curious about a machine that runs with a whoosh instead of a roar. Faster and faster. Well, it at least Joe Leonard settles the problem of what to do with an obsolete car of the future, it will be repaired and put in a museum. But Joe is still curious about turbines. Practice speed for qualifying climbed to 168 miles an hour. ...169 miles an hour. 170 miles an hour. And Joe Leonard decides that he likes the turbines. He goes faster than he has ever gone before. And winning hope begins to grow in the heart of car owner Andy Granatelli. But Mario Andretti hasn't been able to build speed. He wants the pole position for the third time. The first qualifying week is here, and Mario's 1967 record of 169.779 miles per hour is sure to fall. And fall it does. Graham Hill of London, England sets a new one-lap record of 171.887 and an average of 171.208. But he is the first qualifier of the day. 18 other men are waiting to see if they can do better. Lloyd Ruby of Wichita Falls, Texas is a quiet but determined man. Speed of 167.613 wins him a place in the second row. Bobby Unser of Albuquerque, New Mexico has won the Pikes Peak Hill Climb 8 times and has won 3 out of 4 championship races entered in this year. His qualifying speed of 169.507 in a turbocharged Offenhauser gives him a front row spot. A.J. Foyt, the defending national champion and 3-time Indianapolis winner, is not happy with his speed of 166.821, but he has a place in the 500. Dan Gurney of Santa Ana, California, has won the 500-mile stock car race at Riverside 5 times. But success at Indianapolis has been elusive. Now he qualifies one of his famous Eagle cars. His speed of 166.512 is not great, but the race is 500 miles long. Joe Leonard is an 18-year veteran of racing, starting in motorcycles, then stock cars. He finished third in the 1967 500, and now his new romance with the turbine continues as Parnelli Jones watches. His speed climbs to a fantastic new one-lap record, 171.953. The average is 171.559. Last year, 3 Granatelli brothers watched their world come to an end as Parnelli Jones coasted slowly to a stop in the 196th lap. But right now, the sun shines again in Indianapolis. Their turbine is on the pole, and Joe Leonard has taken a big step into the future. Unser has won twice at Pikes Peak, which is also known as Unser's Hill. Last year, he took second in the 500. His car has a turbocharged Ford engine and four-wheel drive. It's the only one of its type to enter the field. These are the statistics. His speed of 167.069 sounds like another statistic, but it represents driving skill and the work of a master mechanic named George Bignotti. Mario Andretti is on the track with a brand new engine after only 4 laps of early morning break-in. 167.691 is his speed. Not good enough to put him on the pole for the third straight year, but he's up front just the same. When Jim Herdebees left the starting line in his front engine roadster, he said he would qualify or crash. Try again another day. One turbine, 2 turbines, and now 3. Art Pollard makes the field. The first day is over. Then comes rain. A week of practice to build speed. And second week qualifying. There are 17 spots still open in the field. All you have to do is claim one. for something sensible like 162. Maybe it'll be fast enough. And there's three other turns to learn about, too. Sometimes a rookie like Gary Bettenhausen can see something the veterans can't. Instead of trying to make records, he concentrates on a speed that will make the race. 163.562 is certainly no record, but 11 men, 8 of them veterans, will start behind the new Tinley Park Express. While he qualifies, Bill Vukovich thinks about how he will drive the race.
Realize that this race is 500 miles long, and I'm going to try to just get in the race, run as smooth and as fast as I can, and try to stay out of trouble as much as possible, and concentrate on getting the miles under my belt at this racetrack, because all the faster drivers, and I know this to be a fact, the more miles you get here, the faster you're going to eventually go here.
Every mile you run is valuable experience, but you can't run when there's rain. It's frustrating. Just enough to keep the track closed, not enough to go for cover.
When we are able to use the track, we use it for practice for 30 minutes.
Remember that race in 1950 when it rained? Johnny Parsons and Dwayne Carter remember. Parsons won it. Henry thinks his watch is broke because it's after 6. It's the last day of qualifying, and officials trying to fill out the field extend the time, which explains why Bill Pewterbaugh apologized for only going 157 miles an hour and mumbled something about getting lost in the dark. But on Monday, time is extended again and the scramble is on. Miles. That's what it takes to qualify. But sometimes winning can be easier than just making the race. For Jim Hurtubise, it's a case of plain stubbornness. He's made up his mind that his front engine roadster would make the field. From somewhere, he coaxes that extra bit of speed and qualifies at 162.191. Dixon tries out the car in which Mario Andretti set last year's pole record. Maybe some of the magic still clings to the car, or maybe Dixon, like Jim Hurtubise, has a stubborn streak. At the last moment, he bumps Bruce Walkup and wins a place for race day. Qualifying is finally over. Exciting race. Yes, that will come in a moment when the green flag drops. But right now, the sight of 33 individual steps into the future, traveling in formation at slow speed, is worth all the headaches that brought them together.
Field gets through the first turn.
begins to smoke. Joe Winter has moved out from the pole position and leads the field on the first lap. As they race through the main straightaway, Andretti attracts the attention of his crew by driving through the pits, out the south end, and back onto the track. Next time around, he pulls in for a quick diagnosis of his problem. While Leonard leads, Bobby Unser is second. Mechanic Clint Bronner continues to try and get the car back into competition as the field comes around again. But the car is beyond help. It would take several hours to fix. In the eighth lap, Bobby Unser turns on the speed and passes Leckett in the main straightaway. They continue to duel through the turns. It looks as though the turbine and the turbocharged Ford are evenly matched. Then Jim Hurtubise pits with a broken piston. The second part of his dream, winning the race, is gone. Individual contests develop back in the pack. A.J. Foyt and Al Unser duel on the turns. Roger McCluskey pits with a broken oil filter as Larry Dixon comes in for a driver change. Mario takes over. Maybe with another car, he can still win the race. He storms back on the track, but Bobby Unser is far ahead, with Leonard, John Cott, Ruby, Hill, Al Unser, Foyt, and Gurney behind him. Then Mario comes in again, this time to stay. It was a very short, exciting race for a man who wanted so much to win.
Let's give him a hand. What a disappointment, I know.
In the 40th lap, Al Unser pits his four-wheel drive car and starts back into the race. But flames back up through the turbocharger and precious moments are lost as George Bignotti gets the fire out. One lap later, Al Unser comes through the main straightaway and hits the wall on turn one. Cars try to avoid his rolling wheel, and the cleanup crew moves Al's car off the track as fast as possible.
All right, in car number 24. That's the reason for the yellow. Al Unser in car number 24.
Arnie Knipper comes in with a damaged nose caused when he hit Unser's wheel. Later, Al is an unwilling spectator in the pits. Bobby Unser still holds his lead over Leonard. Lloyd Ruby has moved into third. But Ruby decides that he will be the first in the group to pit. He's out in 21 seconds. Laps later, Unser sacrifices the lead, comes in and goes out in 27 seconds. Joe Leonard makes it in 26 seconds. And last year's winner, A.J. Foyt, is out. When everything settles down again, Ruby has the lead. Unser is second, and Leonard third. Dan Gurney makes his second pit stop halfway through the race. Unser and Leonard have moved ahead of Ruby. Graham Hill is fourth. A few laps later, Graham Hill loses a wheel in turn two and hits the wall. One turbine is out. As he explained later, I hit the wall rather smartly.
Graham Hill is out of the car and is okay. Graham Hill is out of the car and is okay.
When the car caution light is on, that is the best time to make your pit stop. Leonard takes advantage of his teammate's misfortune in turn two and comes in for his second fuel service in the race. And Bobby Unser does the same thing. Joe is out first, taking the lead. But Unser runs close to him. In the 120th lap, the green flag speeds the field, and Bobby Unser drives right on by Leonard like he was standing still. First 500, first accident. Bill Vukovich gets acquainted with turn three. He's okay. The car is okay, and he gets a restart. But Rutherford and McElreath tangle. Mosley spins into the infield. And McElreath comes in to get something done about his damaged nose. Teammate A.J. Hoyt has some idle time on his hands, so he takes 12 minutes to install a new radiator core in McElreath's car. Debris on the track puts the caution light on. Joe Leonard gets the signal to pit, but the green comes back on before he can get in, and now he is confused. But Andy lets him know just what he wants. It's the 156th lap. Unser leads as Leonard storms in for a 17-second service stop. Makes his third pit stop. Leonard has taken over second spot. Then the bottom drops out of Lloyd Ruby's world. He is forced into the pits again with ignition trouble. He waits while his crew gallantly finds the trouble and replaces a coil in 6 minutes 29 seconds. Such a little thing to cost a great team the race. In the 181st lap, Carl Williams puts the caution light on in the back stretch. There's a stubborn fire, and Leonard is locked in first place with Unser and Gurney right behind him. They move around the track. The caution light continues, and it looks as though the race will finish under the yellow with Leonard a certain victor. But the wreckage is towed away. At the start of the 192nd lap, the green flag comes out and the incredible happens. Joe Leonard accelerates, but nothing happens. The turbine engine dies and the car rolls to a stop in turn one as Bobby Unser sweeps into the lead. Andy Granatelli is stunned. This is the kind of a nightmare which can happen in broad daylight. And as if to prove it, Art Pollard's car quits cold in turn three. One, two, three turbines qualified. One, two, three turbines went out of the race. A great race driver walked slowly past winner's circle. He fell just 20 miles short of being there. Another man will now claim that honor. The checkered flag drops and Bobby Unser wins the greatest victory of them all for the famous Unser family and his mechanic, Judd Phillips. Daniel Sexton Gurney is second. An achievement which places him more firmly among the world's great racing drivers. Car owner Bob Wilkie heads for winner's circle. He knows the way. He was there twice before. Bob Unser was crusty but sentimental.